CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
Warren Buffett said, "Success is getting what you want, and happiness is wanting what you get." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers who get what they want. Our first playmaker doubled his company's revenue since he joined 4 years ago, while our next playmaker is a leader in on-site micro data centers. With us today is a CEO whose company has more than 1 million members on their journey to better health and well-being, while our next CEO's company is a leader in the data-enhanced property market. These great playmakers are Mike Lamb, CEO of Vivere, and Hugh Karspek. And Hugh is CEO of DartPoints, and we're going to begin today's show with Hugh. DartPoint CEO Hugh Karspekken has nearly 20 years of cross-industry technology experience, from data networking to fiber optics to wireless infrastructure. He spent the early half of his career in Silicon Valley helping to start and grow several startups. Founded in 2012, DartPoint is now a leader in the emerging data-enhanced property market and is evolving the data center industry through its network of highly efficient, fully compliant, cost-effective, state-of-the-art, on-demand, and on-premise micro data centers. Well, Hugh, welcome to the Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, we were talking about it in the, in the introduction. What is data-enhanced property?
Well, absolutely. Well, this is something that's been around for quite some time. What we're doing now, though, is to date, we have a lot of technology, a lot of fiber, a lot of wireless assets that are starting to come out to the real estate properties. Well, just because you have this connectivity doesn't mean that the property is actually fully utilizing those assets. So by taking in telecom, you've got connectivity, then you have capacity, which is people are starting to talk and interact more. But now we have performance and reducing latency. So by placing a micro data center on site, we're bringing the fiber, the wireless together. We're bringing the computing assets and storage assets into a site that is meant for as an amenity to the property that the tenants in that property can use for their own data footprint.
Okay, let's just take that. You started talking about it, but what is it exactly you do, going beyond what you just mentioned?
So micro data center is, as the name implies, a much smaller data center. So we build a full critical infrastructure, which is taking the real estate property, bringing in stable, reliable, redundant power, adding cooling since these computers get quite hot. And we are providing an environment into which you place your computer systems. This is a market that's been around. The data center industry has been around for quite some time. It started as the central offices with the AT&T and Verizons, and it has now evolved into the much larger mega centers like the CyrusOne's, the Digital Realty Trusts. And so what we do is we provide the space, the power, the cooling, and the telecom for these assets to be on-site, directly connected, whether the tenant is down the hallway or up a couple floors directly into their assets.
We were talking about this before the show started. You're really developing, as you mentioned, an amenity for the client because you're putting in that building, and now they have the data center right there as compared to being, as you talked about before we start, in the cloud, which could be a specific center. You said there's only about six of them in the United States.
Well, that's where the cloud started. In the United States, there are six cities that were hubs of the internet, if you will, and since then, it's spread out. And as I mentioned in our conversation earlier, that data does nothing but distribute. And so it starts centralized, it enhances itself centralized, and then it distributes. But once you place these assets, the enterprise users are becoming more and more sophisticated. And there is no one-size-fits-all, one-solution-solves-all-problems panacea. So they're starting to use a little bit of cloud over here. They're using a little bit of disaster recovery outsource offsite data center, but then they've got their own resources. These come in the forms of IT closets for some of the smaller users, or their own private data center that might be 1,000 square feet that they have on site to handle their own private information. But their business might be healthcare. Their business might be accounting. We're in the data center business, so we can drive the cost of that way down and provide that as an operating expense that they can, if they choose, to put a little bit of capital expense into it. But this means that they're not operating. Anybody who understands technology, 30 cents of the dollar goes to operations. So the idea here is if this is already a cost center, you're kind of digging the hole deeper. Now, there are points where it makes sense to own it yourself versus to pay. But at the same time, what we found is your digital footprint is starting to quickly surpass your real estate footprint in terms of cost and also criticality. And so the idea here is, do you want to be managing your data, or do you want to be managing the generator, the uninterruptible power source, the cooling systems, or have me do that? And so that's what I do. So I can drop the cost as much as 48%.
Then you must spend a lot of time with your potential customers consulting to find out what they actually want and put it together as a custom unit.
That is exactly right. These are, we have a standard way to do this, but outside of that standard footprint, there's a lot of customizable features. So for example, being small, and I'll do a slight segue here. A lot of folks in the data center think that economies of scale are based on size. Well, as we went into our research and development, when we started the company, we found that there are economies of scale based on a reduced size. And so as long as you play within those boundaries, you're able to keep the cost very significantly low, which means you have more dollars to spend on the customization of the assets and features that the customer really wants to use. For example, you might have a customer that wants biometrics all the way into the rack. Why do they want that? I don't know, but I get those requests. Or they want certain types of surveillance, or they want certain types of features that are turned on that in a larger data center you can't necessarily do because it requires a much larger expense.
Well, how do you find your customers? Because you have a couple of different customers. You have the actual user, that company. You also have developers, too, and realtors. How do you find them, and which ones do you focus on?
That is a very good question. That is actually the technology real estate translation that is extremely important in placing these types of assets on site. So I'll use an analogy that goes in a little bit of my background. When we were building the cellular backhaul market back in 2000, when they were putting data over the cellular voice channel, well, the cell tower industry was very important because they had to find people who would place a tower on their property. And at first, this was a no-brainer, but then they kind of had to start coercing people and start trying to identify, you know, Mr. Farmer, would you mind putting a 100-foot mast on your property? It's very similar with the micro data center world. When you go in, if you ignore the real estate owner, then you are ignoring your most powerful ally. And also, arguably, the person who's going to benefit the most from this asset in the building. So, for example, if I deploy my own capital in his property, I enhance the NOI of the property. Also, he doesn't have to deploy his capital for his tenant through tenant improvement dollars to build an IT room that will expire over just a short period of time. So you reach out to the real estate owners. What we have is a DNA, a fingerprint, if you will, very analogous to oil wells with geologists. You can identify a building that really can hold this. And they're not necessarily the criteria that you think they would be. And then once you go in, you leverage that building, you engage with the tenants. This is not something that you walk in and say, Mr. Tenant, I want your data deal next month. That's not how people do data center deals. But you go in, you show them the data center is there. People like to fill data centers once they see the data center. They don't like to do things on spec. And so ultimately, between the real estate owner and the tenant, they come together, and over time, 18 months, 24 months, that you start getting the fill rate that is actually fairly quick for the data center industry.
Well, I've seen huge data centers on TV. They take up a lot of space. Typically, how small or how large are yours?
Our data centers, on average, are about 2,500 square feet.
Which isn't too large.
It is not. It is amazing all the things you can do in 2,500 square feet that you can't do in 250,000 square feet.
Can you go in and retrofit?
Absolutely. So we are, that is a great question. We are starting to have people who have asked us to come in and sundown their data center, where we come in and we can actually take some of the assets and retrofit it, improve it. We are using state-of-the-art technology that was developed by the mega data centers. Very creative, very innovative players that this technology is fantastic. They've built this technology as stopgap technologies for the larger data centers, but it's right up the fairway for us. And so this is we can go in, we can retrofit, but it's much smaller, and we play around with the space and we play around with the power. Those are the two things that create a paradox in the data center world.
Now, you've been in business about 4 years. Couldn't have been an entire bed of roses over those 4 years. What kind of obstacles have you run into? Is it really helping people understand what you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. So they're the first. I've started a couple companies in the past, and you have this what I call the baby sea turtle stage, where you are just scrambling to get in the water, and you're just because you get in the water doesn't mean you're safe, but you're a little bit safer, but your opponents change. And so we started, the larger data centers had a real issue with this because they didn't quite understand, what are you doing? No one can build this. Obviously, they understand that, yes, you can build it. You can build it very reliably. But the hardest part is they thought that we were competitive. So within the last year and a half, they've realized, since basically what the data centers are up against is that Silicon Valley is spitting out software and applications that are basically going to ultimately enhance the data center industry, but it's going to turn it on its ear. And so I think they were taking out their aggression on me that should have been directed more towards Silicon Valley. But when they realized that I'm actually complementary, some of the larger data centers identified that, wait a second, you're a customer aggregator for me. You're accessing people that I can't get to. We call it the edge. We call it access. And ultimately, I can either be on site and I can help you, or you can let one of your competitors do it. Because my data center does not work for someone who is looking for 1,000 racks, that is looking for 10 megawatts of power, that is a very different customer. But they do lurk in some of these buildings, and some of them don't quite look the same. If people take a look at it, right now, the top Fortune 1000s are using quite a bit of data, but if you take a look at the guys that are really using it, it's literally the top 5%, top 1%. But now that's starting to expand, and you're starting to have some enterprises get quite large.
Well, tell everybody where they can find out more about Dart Points and how they can use your services.
Well, absolutely. So our website is www.dartpoints.com. And we've got the high-level information, and we have a 1-800 number that can obviously call and we can engage. This is a very consultative process at the beginning. We also have our sites listed that they can go to where they could be looking at a property that already has a Dart Points data center in there. But most importantly, since our costs are so low, we can actually go and build a data center for a customer on their property. So we are looking actively for new real estate.
And your web address and phone number are on our website too, which is Playmakers Talk Show. Hugh, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much.
Hugh Karsbecken is the CEO of Dart Points. Don't go away. We have more. We're going to talk health with the CEO of Vivere. His name is Mike Lamb. Back with Mike right after this.
Operation Kindness is the original and largest no-kill animal shelter in North Texas, having saved more than 80,000 cats and dogs over almost 40 years. On a day-to-day basis, Operation Kindness cares for approximately 300 cats and dogs, with another 150 in foster homes. In the past 12 months, more than 4,200 homeless cats and dogs have received medical care, clean shelter, nutritious food, and playtime until they were adopted into a new forever home. Go to OperationKindness.org to adopt or foster a dog or cat. Donate or volunteer. That's OperationKindness.org.
Wipe Out Kids Cancer is a Dallas-based nonprofit organization founded in 1980 dedicated to raising awareness and funding for pediatric cancer research on a national basis. Wipe Out Kids Cancer has raised over $4 million in the crusade against pediatric cancer and spent over 30 years developing programs to not only fight childhood cancer, but to also provide hope and support to kids and families battling cancer. Our mission is to work relentlessly for a day when children are living cancer-free. You can help make a difference. Go to WOKC.org to donate or volunteer. That's WOKC.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. This segment, as I mentioned before, we're going to talk health. As President and Chief Executive Officer, Mike Lamb has the mission of positioning Vivere as a trendsetter in the integration of corporate wellness and progressive technology. Mike joined Vivere as President and Chief Operating Officer in 2012 and led the company's efforts in building scalable service delivery and technology organization, which supported record company growth while improving client and member satisfaction year over year. Vivere is a leader in innovative workplace wellness technology, supporting and empowering members on their journey to better health and well-being. Its proprietary application manages member health data, activity, incentives, and third-party insurance claims to personalize wellness programs. With more than 350 clients, nearly 1 million members in a variety of industries across the country, its wellness programs are designed to create a culture of health while managing healthcare costs. A lot to talk about. Mike, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be here today.
Well, you have an interesting background. I want to see how this ties together because you graduated from Furman University. You received a BA in history. Your background is in human resource management. How did all that get you to Viveri?
Well, it's like all of us, it's a very long and winding road. But honestly, I took a detour from college and was a professional musician for about 5 years.
And what instrument?
Play guitar and sing. So we were on the road in the Southeast trying to become famous rock stars. And after about 5 years of some great experiences and sitting in studios like this, actually, decided it was time to get into the business world. I knew with my degree I wasn't going to be an accountant or a doctor or lawyer at that point, but I knew I could sell. I'd been in front of audiences and performing and all of that, and got a sales job, fortunately, at ADP, the big payroll and HR and benefits processor. And really, that's how it all started. I was at ADP for over 21 years, moved through the sales organization into the service and operational general management ranks, and had an opportunity to take that experience with working with benefit and HR professionals into a somewhat of a similar platform at Viveri nearly 4 years ago.
Did they find you or did you find them?
They actually found me. I was connected to Viveri's private equity firm out of Charlotte several years back and had kept up a dialogue, and this opportunity arose and it was the right time and right place.
Well, I explained what Viveri is in the beginning. How does it work? Tell us what you actually do and how it helps the employer and the employee.
Well, it helps both constituents. Essentially, what we do is we go into mid-size employers, anywhere from, say, 500 employees to several thousand or 100,000. It can scale up as high as we need to. And we work with that employer to understand what their cultural goals are with health and well-being. What are they trying to drive? Do they have issues with certain costs and conditions? Are they trying to drive more engagement, more activity, more collaboration across the company? And then we work with them to design an incentive-based program that enables their employees, typically by completing the program, to gain a benefit on their amount of healthcare premium that they pay. Now, they can also offer other incentives like HSA contributions or cash or incentive malls. We can be very flexible there. But the design is that the employer decides we want our employees to establish a health profile, understand their biometric conditions and risk factors, and then based on the culture, do a number of activities that provide persistent engagement in their health awareness, and then offer things like coaching and chronic condition management to help the folks that are, truly driving the most cost in the system.
What I liked about what I heard and read is they're having fun doing this.
There's also, exactly, it has to be fun. The early days of wellness, in several years ago, many companies were actually moving to outcomes-based programs, which are kind of the stick approach. And that means if I don't make my BMI number or my cholesterol isn't right, I get penalized. And obviously that doesn't have a great connotation for individuals. And so our approach is, what do you want to work on? How can we engage you? And how can we serve up content that's relevant to you, that's based on goals that you want to set, and then enable you to join in a social-like community with other like-minded folks in your company to help each other on, to challenge each other, to cheer each other, and ultimately, drive the improvement or the maintenance of health that you're looking for.
You mentioned coaching before, that you're actually being a coach for the employer and the employee, working with them to help them figure out what they have to do specifically to become healthy.
That's correct. Part of our service, which differentiates us in the market in that we are truly integrated. There are, of course, companies that offer coaching and so forth, but we are truly comprehensive and do it all in one place out of Dallas, obviously. And what we do is provide programs that help employees with lifestyle conditions, diet, exercise, nutrition, stress, and help folks work on what they need to work on to, again, either maintain health or improve their health, meet their goals.
You're making, as an employee, you're making me healthier, which means there's less chance I'm going to have to see a doctor, less chance I'm going to have to spend money, less chance I'm going to be sick. So this must reduce, reduce the cost of for the employer spending money on their employees in healthcare.
Well, that's certainly the name of the game. And actually, it works in a couple of different ways. Ironically, companies that use our program might see their costs go up in the first year because we're driving people to get preventative care, folks that have not been to the doctor for years. They might be ignoring conditions. And those are the costs that become catastrophic if left, you know, unchecked or untreated. But what we see in years two, three, and ongoing is that folks who participate spend less in general in terms of their claims trend than folks that don't. And we also see folks that participate over long periods of time, say a five-year study that we just did, folks in the program saw their risk factors reduced by almost 50%, which we know avoids costs down the road.
Well, you mentioned HSA, health savings account, which I have also.
Yes.
And this is not a health savings account per se, but it's I'm taking care of myself so I don't have to spend on the low end. I only have to have that catastrophic coverage at the high end. So the employer all gaining on this.
Exactly. And what many of our clients do with high deductible plans is they'll say, okay, look, as an employee, we'll offer you this base benefit package. And if you participate and complete the wellness program, we'll deposit, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 into their HSA account. So it's a win-win, you know, for both the employer and the employee.
Well, after you put together and implement the wellness program for a company, how do you determine if it's successful?
Well, we measure things on several areas. Most clients start off by wanting to know, what's our engagement? Do we have high percentage of the population participating? What are they doing? What kinds of activities are they doing? Everything from, you know, their Fitbit and their steps and their challenges and things that we offer through our technology. So that's certainly a pillar of what we measure. Second big pillar is measuring risk factors and conditions. And I mentioned that stat a moment ago that folks that participate long-term will reduce their risk factors. And that's something that we're looking for. Every company might be a little bit different in terms of where their problem population might be, and we'll focus on that with different targeted programs and activities. So we want to see that risk factor number coming under control. And then the third piece is something that you also alluded to earlier, is that over time, are we impacting the claims trend? Now, we don't necessarily say, hey, we're going to save you money. There are some cases where that has happened, but we certainly can say, if you have the right incentive, the right plan levers, your claims trend for those who participate will be lower than those who don't.
So you're really going in there with different types of programs. You have that healthy person who works out. There's one program for them. One who's neither healthy or in bad shape, getting them doing something. And for those who do have a problem, you're helping them turn that around.
Exactly. And that really is part and parcel of what we try to do. We want to engage everybody based on where they are in their health continuum. Everyone has something different that they might need to work on. And that healthy person that's, you know, running marathons and triathlons, that's great. They can be a wellness champion. They can lead by example, and they can drive engagement. Folks that are kind of moderate, which is kind of the folks in the middle, we help them with various conditions, or they might want to lose some weight or watch their cholesterol. We've got programs for that. And then folks that suffer from chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma or COPD or many other things, we actually have clinical staff that can devise care plans for those individuals, make sure that they're following those plans, getting the right medications, and making the right doctor visits to control that condition.
And as an employee, this is costing me nothing.
Exactly.
It's now a benefit to me.
Exactly. The employee only stands to gain in terms of, in general, you know, paying less in their benefits. So it's a win-win.
Well, let me ask you this. You're going into companies and you're seeing what they're doing or not doing. What's usually the biggest thing that it's doing, that a company's doing wrong, that they need to turn around?
Yes. In most large companies that we work with are doing some form or fashion of wellness. It's not as if they're not doing anything at all. But the biggest downfall that we see and the way we design our service to attack that is that their programs are disjointed. They might have a biometric screening provider. They might use another provider to run some games or challenges. They might have a clinic. But the problem is employees don't know where to go from step to step to step. And our program joins all of those things together holistically with guidance so that employees will actually use it, they'll enjoy using it, and we'll get the outcomes that we're looking for.
Well, it's obvious that you have a great program. You have you joined the company 4 years ago, and you doubled revenue. What did you do to increase the revenue that dramatically?
Well, we've invested a lot in our sales and marketing, both in terms of our channels. We have two employer channels. One is we market through benefit brokers and TPAs. That's how we grew the company. We also have a channel that goes direct to large employers, and so we gain access and sell those companies directly. So it's been a kind of a dual approach in terms of adding some more footprint there, and our continued success has helped fuel that. Our reputation in the market and wins that we've had and so on have also contributed to that growth.
Now, I think that if an employee like this, they'd want to get their company into it. So from an employee point of view or an employer, where they find out more about Viveri?
Well, you can find out all about us at our website, which is www.viveri.com.
You better spell that for them.
I better spell it. It's V-I-V-E-R-A-E, Viveri. And all of our information is there. You can sign up for a demo and take a tour of our technology and receive any other case study or other product information that you might be looking for.
And if you didn't get the spelling of that, Viveri, you can go to PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and it's right there too. Mike, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Mike Lamb is the CEO, pardon me, of president of Viveri. We've had a great show today. Hugh Karsbeckman was our first guest. He's the CEO of DartPoints. Thank you very much for being a listener to Playmakers Talk Show. Make sure you check out our website, which is playmakerstalkshow.com. We're going to be back next week with more Playmakers, and we'll see you then. Thanks.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting playmakers.